Oh, hello. I'm Connor from an Irish rock and roll folk band called Villagers.
You walked in and you saw that I had that CD that's over to my left from that other band, and you went, wait a minute, what the heck's that doing here? That wasn't even released in this other country that we're sitting in here.
Yeah.
So revisionist history, you know, don't start with, well, I was born a young child and whatever. But tell me some of the stuff that people really might actually be interested or not interested in, and the not interested stuff, just because you want to tell them.
That's a very, very open question.
Yes, it is. That's what we're doing here. It's San Francisco, for crying out loud.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you've got that. Well, if that CD came out in 2003, I would have been just turning 20.
Yeah. Wow, you're old now, man.
Yeah.
And what really is interesting about the cover of this, and I was thinking about this as I was putting these two together and then reading some press.
Yeah.
That nothing's changed. I mean, there's no meaning. All there is meaning, right? A body of opinion, it holds no meaning, going round in circles, searching for false endings, a purity unreachable, opinion is a compromise, just leave it alone, the unreachable. You are not able, you will destroy yourself.
Very dramatic.
Nothing's changed, man. Jeez. Jeez, Louise.
I like to think it has, but no, I'm slightly embarrassed by those words. They're kind of, I think I was just... I don't know. I don't know what I was even saying. I have no idea.
But it doesn't matter because this band did pretty well there, right?
We did, yeah. That was our very first release, but we kind of spent the following years kind of touring and
yeah. There was a modicum of success, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. But we'd all like pretty much grown up together, kind of writing, and you know, so it was like
mates
proper,
in school.
Yeah, friends first.
Right, yeah, yeah. Right. And what was this band? I mean, it's interesting because when I listen to the tracks on the way here, you know, it starts out kind of melodic, but then it gets pretty punky.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, we were all over the place. We used to swap instruments and sort of run around the stage and do different things, and we were wild.
Were Villagers really formed one day after that band broke up? Is that really true?
Well, I wrote one of the songs that we eventually released the day after.
Right. So yeah. how did this break up? When did you wake up and go, immediate no, Villagers soon? Or did that not happen?
That didn't happen. I was, when was that? That was probably 2007. And we kind of, two of the guys just obviously didn't want to do it anymore. So we had one of those really serious meetings in a cafe in Dublin. And you could sense the impending
the angst.
Doom. So it all ended, and literally like an hour after we split up, I called my drummer, who now is in Villagers, and said, let's start a band. And he had to endure like a year and a half of various different versions of the same songs and stuff, but he stuck with it. So
now where did Kathy Davey fit into all of this?
Well, she's while I was in the Immediate, I was recording instruments for one of her albums. And so
now people here, I'm willing to bet you that at least 49% of my listeners have no idea who Kathy Davey is.
Probably, yeah.
So tell me.
49%.
I just made up that number. It sounded good.
She's an Irish singer with a very beautiful voice and a very talented writer. And I spent the kind of 2 years following the Immediate, after the Immediate, I spent touring with her as her guitarist. And also recording with her on her albums. And that was when I wrote all the songs for Villagers.
And now the lore says that when you did your first official Villagers show in 2008, you had rehearsed like twice. Is that lore or truth?
Might have been true. Yeah, I think it might have been.
And where did you have the bollocks to do that?
Well, see, it's kind of easy peasy. It kind of works because... the way it worked was that I'd sort of given all the guys like all the demos with the way everything was played on the demos. So they all learnt what they were meant to play. And then I think we got together maybe twice and played a show because they're all amazing musicians.
So they were able to do it.
Yeah.
And then you released an EP first. Now, was that released only over there?
Yeah, yeah. My drummer has a label called Any Other City Records. And we released like an EP and then we released a single on it before signing.
And now, is any of that on here? Is any of that
there's two songs from the EP re-recorded for the album.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then those other two songs are just never going to see the light of
day. Well, you can still get it. I think we still have a few more copies, and you can order it on the Any Other City website. So
everybody who writes up this band, and particularly you, portrays it as dark, dark lyrics.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's not too dark. You didn't walk in the room and suddenly the light went out. So this is kind of your opportunity here to kind of chat a little bit about where all this comes from, you know, and not the typical, so like you write your songs, so what are you thinking? But more about, I kind of want a reaction because I don't, you know, my favorite music in the world is the one that has the dark lyrics and the really pretty melodies. And this nails that, you know, that's like the oldest trick in the book, right? Uh-huh. I have some really, really, you know, kind of dark.
That's the Roy Orbison trick.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Pretty Paper or, you know, even Pretty Woman is like the darkest, saddest song mankind's ever invented, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is this purposeful? I mean, you know,
I don't think anything is really purposeful when I'm writing the songs. I tend to kind of just sort of let them come out themselves a little bit, and the only way to do that is to kind of give yourself time and give yourself space to get into a certain state of mind, I guess. So I'm sometimes like super surprised about the outcome as well, about where the songs have taken me.
Is it considered to be a concept record? Is it just considered to be a bunch of songs that kind of, because you know when you position a record with the name Becoming a Jackal,
mm-hmm.
you know, that gives you a little bit of, you know, I mean, it opens it up for some conjecture, does it not?
Yeah, I think concept is a bit of a dangerous word when it comes to music, though, because
yes.
it can kind of conjure up different ideas.
Yes,
but I think all the songs definitely have a direction thematically and also maybe not so much musically, but definitely lyrically. They all have a certain sort of obsession with death.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, The Meaning of the Ritual and 27 Strangers and To Be Counted. Yeah.
I think it's kind of something that I was sort of preoccupied with when I was writing. But that's not to say it made its way into my everyday conversation or anything. I'm not really that kind of guy. I just put it into the songs. That's where they go.
Okay, so you write the songs, and again, this is information that's not all that readily available.
Mm-hmm.
So you write the songs, and then you says to yourself, "Hmm." So it says co-produced
by yes, my friend Tommy McLaughlin.
Yeah. So yeah. Co-produced. So you didn't go and look for a big giant Mondo.
No, because the thing is, before we even went in to record the album, I'd kind of already figured out pretty much all the arrangements in like my little demo box thing, which I do at home. So by the time we actually went to record the album, it had all been worked out and figured out, and then there was a few little changes and extra things we added.
So it was really heavily about putting it together, playing it well, and about the mix.
Yeah, it was really about just presenting what we'd already created in the clearest, least kind of mixed up way possible or something. Yeah, it's kind of, we wanted to just give the recording a really direct feel so that the songs could just speak for themselves.
But it's really purdy.
Purdy, yeah. It's purdy.
Really, as they say in the Old West, really purdy.
Purdy album.
Is it always amazing to you, as opposed to back there, when you show up and people are singing along or people are screaming out a song and they're going, you know, play it on and you're like, how do you even know this?
Yeah.
So what's that like for you? Because it is all still very new, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was starting to happen in Ireland, I guess, but to come halfway around the world and it to happen is pretty mind-bending. You
yeah.
know, it's pretty exciting.
The world has changed,
and
right?
The fact that because at the moment I'm doing like a solo shows everywhere, and you can really notice it. And then because there's nothing else to focus on except for the audience, you know, my bandmates are back at home, you know. So
yeah, and I mean, and back here, I'm holding up. This is. Can you guys see it? I'm holding up the immediate CD EP. Is that there was no MySpace.
Yeah, there was no such thing.
Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, there was nothing back then.
People were, I mean, there was email, but uh-huh. you know, and it made all those weird sounds and took forever for it to happen. Right?
Yeah, that was only, yeah.
So that's the difference now of being a rock and roll human being in this X amount of years is just kind of crazy, isn't
it? Yeah, the connection. I was actually just talking about that to my friend Peter, who just walked out the room earlier on, about how it's so much more, there's positives and negatives to it, I think. The fact that you kind of have to, there's a pressure to kind of constantly keep in touch with your fans or whatever. And sometimes that's great if you're posting up content and stuff to do with your music, but I think not if you're telling them that you need to go to the toilet or something.
It's yeah, well, and people do that, right? Yeah. So how did you get to Domino?
They came to me, yeah.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that cool?
Yeah, well, basically we played, I think it was our second ever show as Villagers, and one of the guys from Domino who lives in Dublin, he came to see, he didn't come to see us, he came to see the person we were supporting, who was Cass McCombs.
Uh-huh.
Who's a Domino.
Absolutely.
Dude. And I think he caught just the end of our set, and it just kind of put us on his radar, I guess.
You're so sick of being asked this. I'm just telling you. I'm telling you, you're sick of this. But also, that my favorite thing is it's called a prize and not an award.
Which?
That Mercury
oh,
thing.
Oh, the prize. Yeah, Mercury.
Yeah, it's so much better to win a prize than an award. I want a prize.
Yeah, it's a little bit less formal.
Yeah, uh-huh. But there, you know, everybody has things to hang on to, and I think that people who are Anglophiles, in particular, you know. In here in the U.S., it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to see them because they, you know. So what does it mean to you? Because I know to some musicians, and I've had a lot of them in here who have won or not won, just the fact that it's, you know, in the picture is pretty amazing. How about you?
To me, it's exciting, and it's I feel somewhat honored, I guess. But I also have that weird apprehension, which I used to get on school sports days and stuff, where I kind of felt a bit, ooh, competition. Competition to me is a bit of a yucky word, so I'm just kind of going to be thankful to be there and play the show on the night, and, you know, if you win, you win.
And whatever happens now. Now, when is it? When is the official show?
It's September, I think it's.
So wait, so you
beginning
have
of September.
So you have to think about this for a whole another. What, 6 weeks or 5 weeks or
well,
something?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not going to do that.
It's like, whatever.
I'm just going to.
Whatever.
No, I mean, you know, it's a cool thing. It's a really cool thing. And the variety of people who are up for it is kind of wide and, you know.
Yeah. But the other thing is that as I'm going through, you know, you're out of here after this. When I say out of here, you're going back to the other part of the world, and lots and lots and lots and lots of sold out shows.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
That's mm-hmm. pretty awesome. And aren't you playing some amazing venue that like
yeah,
totally blown away?
We're gonna play a place called the Old Vic Tunnels
yes.
in London, which we went down to check out. A few weeks ago, and it's underneath the tube station there. So
natural reverb.
Yeah, well, it's actually a really strangely dry room.
Is it really?
Yeah, which is good because you can kind of the surrounding tunnels are kind of echoey, but the actual room we're playing in is like a little cozy little kind of theater room, and there's a bar just right beside it, and it's cool. And you can hear the train passing above you, and it's not
cool.
too loud though.
But sounds neat.
It's kind of musky and a little bit smelly, and the toilet situation's a bit dodgy, but it'll be a good time. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich,
uh-huh.
and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.